Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Thursday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We're live from the Auction Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns, alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what's going on?
Oh, just hanging out, getting ready to do a radio show. You?
Oh, same thing, my friend. Good win last night. Bad news for the Toronto Raptors. So that was, that was a lot of fun. I saw a great meme today. I just sent it to all my, friends. I got to tell you, it's let me find it right here.
Well, this is good stuff.
There's a guy toasting, and it says, "Well, it was a solid 5 days. Here's to 2022.
Yeah. Is
the guy holding up
it,
a glass? He goes, "Well, it was
Leo
a solid
DiCaprio
5 days.
DiCaprio meme from Great Gatsby? Is that which one?
Is that what it is? I'll send it to you. It's a guy with a mustache and curly hair.
Can you tweet it?
No, that doesn't sound like Leo from Great Gatsby.
That does not sound like Leo DiCaprio from.
I'll send it to you guys right now, and you can say if that's it. Okay, I just sent it to you guys on a text message. Yeah, well, it was a solid 5 days. Here's to 2022. Somebody posted that, and I got such a kick out of it. I said, I'm going to steal it. That's pretty good.
Amen to that. Amen. Yep. Man, we're 7 days in. Jeez.
Yep.
Jeez.
2022 can't come soon enough.
No, but you know what we've got? We have got the Phoenix Suns to keep us company during these rough times, and that is what our top story of the day is here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in.
And the Suns will close it out here and come away with a victory. It'll be their sixth of the year as the final second ticks away. And that's it. Suns win. The Suns won it tonight. The final score, the Suns 123, the Toronto Raptors 115.
I'm with the call last night here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Suns move to 6-2 on the season. They get a team-high 24 out of Devin Booker, 21 from Jay Crowder. The bench was outstanding, in particular the trio of Cam Johnson, Cam Payne, and Dario Saric. And don't look now, and I know it's just 8 games, and I know it's really, really early in the season. The Phoenix Suns are now in a tie with the L.A. Lakers for the best record in the West. The Phoenix Suns, this is the deepest into a season. The Suns have been first in the West since 2009. This is the best start for the Suns through 8 games since that same season, the 2009-2010 season, when they started 7-1. Things are pretty good for the Phoenix Suns so far, Gambo.
Yeah, listen, this is, you know, they're knocking down threes like it's going out of style. I mean, they shot 21 out of 40. Fourth time in franchise history, they made 23-pointers. Man, they were just lighting it up from outside. DeAndre Ayton with a big game rebounding. Cam Payne with a big game with the assist. The bench was outstanding again. Nothing great from Booker or even Chris Paul. I mean, they were fine, but nothing great from them. But 7 players in double figures in scoring. Getting scoring from everywhere. Jay Crowder was fantastic. McHale and Cam was just great. Cam Johnson. And, you know, I thought they were going to put him away in the fourth quarter. They went on a little bit of a run, and they got it up to about 15 points. And I thought at that point, they might just put them away and bury them. But I'll give Toronto's credit. You know, Siakam and Anunoby, those guys came back. Powell hit a three. They closed it to 6. But then what I liked about the game is I liked their ability to close it out. I'm a big fan of being able to close out the games. And, you know, they go to the free throw line, and McHale hits 2 free throws. And then they get a technical foul on Lowry. Book hits a free throw. And then, you know, McHale hits 2 more free throws. And you go to the free throw line. Chris Paul hits 2 more free throws. You go to the free throw line and you win the game. And, you know, they weren't in the penalty and they got there. And then down the stretch, when they had to make all these free throws to make sure they won the game, they did it. I like the way they ended the game.
Yeah, it was, you know, up until the last, I don't know, like 90 seconds or so, it was a little dicey there. I mean, the Suns, I don't think they scored for like a 5-minute stretch in the fourth quarter. They had this super comfortable lead, and Toronto just kept kind of chipping and chipping and chipping. And it's starting to get a little, I think at one point Toronto cut it to a two-possession game. They got it down to six with like a minute left or so.
Yeah, that was a dunk from Adebayo.
Yeah, got a little uncomfortable with that and the way the Suns were closing. And then the free throws kicked in, and it turned into a free throw game. They got Devin Booker got the technical. There was a lot to like out of that game. And yeah, the way they finished, the way they shot the three ball was very, very impressive. I tell you, a few things that stood out to me. Number one, yeah, Devin Booker didn't have a superstar-type game last night, but I did like a couple things about his game. Number one, he had 24 points on only 14 shots. I know he only made six of them, but I still thought he was pretty efficient. Got to the line. He had 15 in the third quarter when that separation kind of started to occur. He only had the one turnover, and that's kind of been a problem for him so far this year. It wasn't last night. He was much more...
Yeah, he
was much more careful with the ball, I thought. I'll tell you something else, man. Jay Crowder, and I know we're all rightfully so infatuated with the Chris Paul acquisition. Man, Jay Crowder is starting to look like he's not – I don't think he's ever going to be a more important acquisition for the Suns than Chris Paul. Could he ever be as important to the Suns as Chris Paul, the acquisition of Jay Crowder?
Oh, boy, that's a fair question. Can he be as important I mean, you can consider it a 1-2 punch, you know? I mean, Crowder came here because Paul came here. I think, we had that interview with Jay Crowder when they got him. I think we were the first ones to get him, and we had a great interview with him, and he talked about, wanting to come. I love guys that want to come here and play hard. He got 3 years and about $30 million, and he's not Trevor Ariza. He's coming here, he's playing his ass off, and he's a strong defensive player, and he could shoot the three, and he's a physical guy. I mean, I talked to a bunch of NBA players right after they got him, and they were like, man, he's a load, man. You can't back him down. You can't move him. He gets that lower position. He's physical. You know, he shoots the ball a lot. You know, that was one of the negatives. Maybe he'll shoot the ball a little bit too much. But, yesterday they needed him to knock down some shots, and he knocked down six threes in the game. So,
yeah,
it's just, I don't know, is as important as Chris Paul? Probably not, but I think when you look at the free agency overall, if you just got Chris Paul and that was all you did, you're not going to be the same team. They needed other areas to address, and they were able to do that. And the biggest one was Jay Crowder. So, they lost Kelly Oubre. They needed to get themselves another wing type guy that could play the power forward spot. And Dario was going to play some center and not all the power forward. They were letting Kaminsky go at the time. And they did let Kaminsky go. So he's a very important signing, but at the same level as Chris Paul, that's a tough one. I would probably say no.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those questions where, I mean, the common sense answer is probably not. And I'm looking at, the season that Jay Crowder has had up until this point, and it's been very hit and miss. They've played eight games. He's really impacted four of them. He really hasn't made a huge difference in the other four. But what impressed Monty Williams the most about Jay Crowder's game last night...
It's good to see guys like Jay, knock down shots and be productive, because we don't run plays for Jay. He just figures it out, and then he's fighting on defense, and he's a willing passer. He understands how to play the game. So I'm happy to see him knock down some shots.
I'll tell you the other thing that stood out to me, and I know it stood out to you as well, the play of the bench, and in particular Cam Johnson, Cam Payne, Dario Saric. Cam Payne had 10 assists and one turnover in 16 minutes. Cameron Johnson, 4 of 7 from the three-point line. Dario Saric, I thought, was terrific last night, 15 points, 5 rebounds. Those three guys combined for 36 points, 7 of 11 from the three-point line, 11 assists, 11 rebounds, 2 turnovers. That is, we talk about things the Suns haven't had in a long time. A bench, depth.
But
that is something the Suns
bench
have not had in a long time.
Yeah, and Bernsie, it's not just the bench, right? It's the versatility that you get in the bench. It's being able to play, have Cameron Payne who, I mean, did you see that full court pressure with Javon Carter and Cameron Payne?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was giddy. I was just so happy. That was so much fun when they closed it. When they got close, when they started to get close, you saw the Suns full court press, forced turnovers. I mean, Payne and Carter full court pressure, turnover, Cam forced a turnover. This was early in the fourth quarter. You know, the game wasn't decided yet, and they decided, you know what? We're going to pressure your ass, and we're going to take the ball away, and they did. So the versatility, they could pressure full court. They're tenacious defenders. Cameron Payne's a willing passer, a good passer, knocks down threes. Sarge had a really good game. He could shoot the ball. He could play the four. He could play the five. You know, Cam Johnson is your 11th pick overall, and you're getting everything you wanted for an 11th pick. I mean, somebody said to me, can he be the sixth man of the year? I go, not right now. Like, no, but he is such a valuable piece to spread the floor. And yeah, the versatility, the bench, it's legit. I said this last week. They have one of the better benches in the NBA. Is it the best? No, but it's one of the better benches in the NBA because they can give you scoring. They pass the ball. What, they have 42 points off the bench? They clobbered Toronto's bench last night.
Yeah, they did. They did. And Cameron Payne was asked about the second unit and why it's been so successful.
I'd probably say it came from the bubble. We build a lot of chemistry there in the bubble. But one thing we do, we just play really hard. We just try our best to play hard and, man, find each other in the right spots. I feel like we have a great chemistry together, and we know where each one is good on scoring, where to find them, and obviously defense. Defense is a big part of the second unit. We just try to find ways to get stops so we can push the pace.
And look, and I'll say this very cautiously, okay, and you know this better than anybody. In the history of the Phoenix Suns, in the recent history of the Phoenix Suns, there have been players who have flashed, who have shown us something for a week or a month or even a month and a half, and you thought, wow, this player is all, look at what he's doing, look at what he's accomplishing. I don't want to say too much about Cam Payne yet, but if this is who he is, if this is who he's going to be, what a find for the Phoenix Suns to be able to pull him out last year, take him to the bubble, have him play the way he's played there, and have him do what he's doing now. If this is who he's going to be as a backup point guard in this league, what an incredible – I don't know if he's going to be that, because remember, Aaron Baines this time a year ago was all everything, and that faded very quickly. But if this is who Cam Payne is, that's a heck of a find by James Jones and the Suns organization.
You know, the difference is that Cameron Payne is a 26-year-old kid, and Aaron Baines is 10 years older and had a history of breaking down. So, what Baines gave you was, you know, he caught lightning in a bottle for a little while. He did. He caught lightning in a bottle. He played out of his mind. He knocked out. Look at him last night. He's terrible. I mean, if I'm a Toronto fan, I'm like, this is the guy you got? I had a Bach and Gasol, and you give me this? This garbage? Look at this. This guy can't play. He looked slow. He looked lethargic. He couldn't get his shot up. I mean, I was watching very early in that game how bad he was, and he was bad. Like, he shot. His first shot was an air ball. Then he missed the layup. Then he turned the ball over. So I'm watching that game, and if I'm a Toronto Raptors fan, I'm like, what the hell made you think this guy could come in here and play basketball? Because he's a third-string center. I said this when I said that they should let him go. He's a third-string center.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, shakeups today to the Cardinals' offensive coaching staff. What do they mean for Cliff? What do they mean for Kyler? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. None of this has been confirmed by the Arizona Cardinals as of yet. There's been no press release. There's been no email. There's been nothing on their social media. This is all coming from media reports. But they seem like relatively reliable media reports. And I can tell you that at least one of them has been confirmed by Josh Weinfuss, who covers the Cardinals for ESPN. The moves made by the Cardinals today. Tom Clements, their passing game coordinator and quarterback's coach, has retired. He was 67 years old. They fired, according to reports, or parted ways, however you want to phrase it, with David Rye, their wide receivers coach. Both of those guys, by the way, came on board when Cliff Kingsbury was hired 2 years ago. And according to a report from Dennis Dodd over at CBS Sports, they have promoted offensive assistant and assistant quarterback's coach Cam Turner. They have promoted him to quarterback's coach. Now, specifics on why, we don't know. We can speculate. We will speculate. We'll have a conversation about it. But I think generally, Gambo, the overarching kind of thought here is that obviously Cliff Kingsbury was not satisfied with something about his offensive coaching staff and was looking to make some sort of a change. And one has to wonder if maybe this is the precursor to even more changes, perhaps like what we were talking about yesterday. You were talking about, not specifically Kurt Warner, but I know you were talking specifically about Kurt. Somebody to help Kyler Murray diagnose defenses a little bit better. I wonder if this is a precursor to something like that.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised at this because Rye is a very well-respected guy around the league. He has a very good relationship with DeAndre Hopkins. You could look at the development of the players and say, you're not getting enough out of Andy Isabella. Yeah, that's a given. Certainly, he was a second-round draft pick. Hasn't given him anything. Keyshawn Johnson, Christian Kirk, are they not getting now? Is it the players or is it the coach, right? That's always a million-dollar question. Is it the players aren't good enough or is it they're not getting coached up and being developed? I don't know. But again, this guy had a good relationship with Hopkins. He's a very well-respected guy. They've still got Jerry Sullivan as a consultant, so he's there. Clements, you know, his contract expired. He's getting up there in age. He's about 67, 68 years old. He was out of football for a little while, but he had worked with Favre. He had worked with Rodgers, but then he was out of football, and they brought him back. He was in real estate or something like that. So, you know, I'm not really surprised at that one, but the wide receiver coach is one of those young up-and-comers. So that's a guy I looked at, and I said, boy, that's kind of surprising. I thought they were really high on him.
Well, and you bring up a really good point, and it's one that we have to consider in all of this, and that is – you know, is it the players' fault for the lack of development, or are they not being coached right? Are they not being – because there are two wide receivers in particular, one very obvious and one not so obvious, that just haven't developed at the rate the Cardinal fans are happy with. And the obvious one is Andy Isabella. The not so obvious one, but I think after the season that he had, we can have these conversations, is Christian Kirk. I mean, it got off to a great start for Christian Kirk this year. Man, it ended with a whimper from Christian. And remember, we are talking about not one, but two second-round draft picks, right? Two guys that you draft a wide receiver in the second round, you are expecting them to be mainstays of your offense for years to come. I know not every draft pick is going to hit. I get it. Not my first rodeo. I understand how these things work. But two wide receivers, both selected in the second round, and neither one of them have really panned out to the level that you probably thought they were going to. Rye might be a little bit of a scapegoat for that, or they might feel like before they lose their window to truly develop these players, they better bring in somebody who can do a better job of that. I don't know. It's kind of a chicken and the egg conversation. I don't know which comes first, which comes last. I don't know, but you can't fire the players, right? So if you've got wide receivers that haven't been developed, that's probably the next step, is to fire the guy who's in charge of developing them.
Yeah, no, it's the only thing I could think of. Because like I said, I mean, his relationship with Hopkins was really good. He had a very good relationship with him. And he is considered one of those young up-and-comers. He'll get hired. He'll get hired. I think a lot of people in the league probably like, wow, I'm surprised that guy got let go. He was considered an up-and-comer, well-respected guy, works hard. But if you look at the progress that was being made by those wide receivers, it clearly wasn't good enough. But I don't know if it's the wide receiver coach, the coordinator, the head coach, or if it's just the players aren't good enough. Time will tell. But and maybe it's just like you feel like you get to the, okay, we got to make some moves. Not going to fire the coach. Not getting rid of the quarterback. We got to make some moves. And so you make some moves for the sake of making a move.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing that kind of shades all of this too is you remember 2 years ago when Cliff was hired, it was a most unusual hire in that the assistants were basically hired by Steve Keim, right? The staff, because this was Cliff's literal first rodeo in the NFL as a coach, he got an unusual amount of help when it came to the general manager, when it came to filling out that staff. And it also, a move like this sort of makes me wonder, were these moves that Cliff wanted? Were these moves that Steve wanted? Did they both want them? Were they, you know, sometimes a coach who might be on the hot seat, you know, certain moves are kind of mandated to them. And these are all things we don't know. I do know this. Cliff Kingsbury on the Scott Van Pelt podcast made it pretty clear. This is back in October after they were 5-2 that he wasn't planning on giving up any play calling anytime soon.
I would retire. I just that is part of the game. I couldn't just.
All right.
there and watch it. A lot of people are great at that and managing games, and that's not my strong suit. My strong suit is calling it and interacting with the quarterback, and I got to play to my strengths.
Okay, now I know that was a couple months ago, but that doesn't sound like a man who'd be giving that up anytime soon if it were up to him, and I don't know if it's going to come to that for the Cardinals offensively.
No, that's what gets that's what gets his juices flowing, right? I mean, that's what he lives for. That's what he wants to do. That's it. That everything else would be boring to him if he just has to manage everything and, you know, work with the coach. You know, he wants to call the plays. He's in the game. He's got to get better at it. I mean, he clearly has to get better at it, but that's why they hired him. They hired him for that play calling. They didn't hire a quarterback's coach or an offensive coordinator that, you know, necessarily was going to work with Kyler the way he does. That's what gets his juices flowing. That's what makes him him, is the ability to call those plays. Now, I'm sure he has some second-guessing and some doubting going on right now about and you've got to go through that if you're him. You've got to go back and, what was I thinking there? Let me see, because those situations are going to rise again. Almost every single situation that he's been in is going to rise again. Hey, it's 3rd and 18. What are you going to do? I guarantee you mark this down. There'll be a 3rd and 15, 16, 17, 18 next year, late in the game, and it's going to be a similar situation. You're down 2 scores, and you got to get this first down. You don't want to punt the ball. That's going to happen. So now if you're Cliff, you got to think about it. You got to go through this. If I had an opportunity to do this again, what would I have done? Okay, great. Now do that the next time. That's what he's got to get better at.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see if this is a precursor to anything bigger for the Arizona Cardinals, some big kind of shakeup offensively to try to – I mean, because let's be honest, the offense was good. Started off great. The offense was good. The way it finished – left a lot to be desired and a lot to be fixed. And along those lines, when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the Cardinals, they used the transition tag on him this time a year ago. So with Kenyon Drake now headed towards free agency, what is Arizona going to do with their starting running back? We'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll presented by Sanderson Ford.
Well, we got the answer to our question, Gambo's 2022 meme. Well, it was a solid 5 days. Here's the 2022.
Oh, it's
from
so funny.
It's from the Netflix show Narcos.
Is that what it's from?
Right. Yeah, it's from Narcos, which is about a Mexican drug cartel.
Yeah, just a little bit different subject context than The Great Gatsby with Leonardo DiCaprio. Just a little bit.
Well, that is, I mean, I don't know memes like other people know memes, but I know that the DiCaprio Gatsby one where he's toasting the champagne glass, that is a frequently used one. So
that was the first image I thought of as well, Bernsie.
Yeah, I hear of a meme of a guy toasting somebody, and that's the one I think of. But this one's good, too. I mean, Narcos is a very, very, very good show.
So I did finish Yellowstone, the first three seasons. Mm-hmm. Great TV show. Have you watched it, Bernsie?
I have. I've enjoyed it very much.
It's such a great TV show. And then Chelsea got a recommendation, so now we're watching a show with Bryan Cranston.
Oh, yeah.
You hear of him?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's
the judge?
Like super famous.
Your Honor. Yeah, it's called Your Honor. Your Honor.
Oh,
okay,
I've
yeah.
seen the promos for that one.
Yeah.
Woo. Well, Bryan Cranston's, I mean, you know, that's Breaking Bad.
Breaking
dude,
Bad
right
fame.
Also, Dr. Tim Watley from Seinfeld.
And Dr.
So he's like, in a nutshell, like I won't give away that he's a judge and his kid is driving a car and he's got asthma and he leans over and he runs over some kid driving a motorcycle. The kid he runs over is the son of a mob boss.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
So he's about to turn his kid in, and then he sees that the kid that died was the mob boss, and he's like, I can't turn you in. And then the whole thing is based on, I'm going to try to cover this up. I'm going to try to cover up my son ran over your son.
Might have to give that one a look-see.
Yeah.
Not bad. Yep. Okay. All right, now that we've gotten to the bottom of that, and then, I'm glad we did, Sarah's here with today's Twitter poll question of the day. Hi, Sarah.
Yes, hi. Hello. How are we doing?
Good. What you got for us?
All right. I know you guys are going to talk about this about an hour from now, I think around 3:45, but we are looking at the first mock draft from Todd McShay that is now out. He has the Cardinals taking Travis Etienne out of Clemson with the Cardinals' number 16 pick. Would you be okay with the Cardinals using that pick on Etienne, the running back? Here are the three options.
Hell no.
Yes, because he's a game changer. No, you need to address other needs with that number 16 pick. or no, do not take a running back at number 16.
Yes.
It's that last one for
yes
you?
Yes or no. Well, I'm just glad you didn't say 8-8. Yes or no.
Don't remind him.
I'm just glad you didn't say 8-8. No, I do not want a running back at number 16. No.
Just can't wait for the next professional sports team in this town to actually be 8-8. It's not going to be the Suns.
Well, hopefully it's not the Suns.
Yeah, hopefully it's not the
something,
Suns.
Not gonna be that. Something went horribly wrong if the Suns
maybe
are the next
D-backs
team to go 8-8.
I'll go, the D-backs are 8-8. 8-8.
I mean, after last year, I think that would most people would take that.
Yeah, maybe. I might take 8-8 from the Diamondbacks after last year. What's our audience say about this?
Okay, I like that it's very spread out. Lots of different opinions here. But right now, with 36% of the vote, people say no, address other needs with that pick. 33% say yes, do take ETN with that pick. He's a game changer. 31% say no, do not use that pick on a running back. So,
but one way or another, yeah, one third of our audience says yes, take a running back. Two thirds of our audience, for whatever reason, say no, don't take ETN.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I know there's no way Burns was going to say yes, take a running back.
Oh, God, are you kidding? That was the most predictable answer in the history of the Burns and Gambo Twitter poll question. Oh yeah, take a running back number 16. That's a proper use of resources. Yeah, do that. No, don't do that, please. All right, thank you, Sarah. We appreciate you putting that together. In the meantime, speaking of running backs, as a matter of fact, our good friends over at Pro Football Focus have put together their top 100 free agents available in the NFL this offseason. Now, keep in mind when we say this, a lot of these guys aren't going to be available. Some will be tagged. Some will be signed long-term. Many of the names on this list will not end up on this list when free agency actually begins. But there were four current members of the Arizona Cardinals organization who made this list. And for this part of the show, we're going to focus on the two offensive players who made this list from the Arizona Cardinals. They listed right tackle Kelvin Beachum as the 75th best free agent available this offseason. Their prediction is that the Steelers will sign him to a one-year deal worth $4.5 million.
Ooh, that's a lot of money.
They predict that is a lot of money, isn't it?
And for him, yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about him for a second, then we'll talk about the other offensive player on the list. It doesn't seem like he would be coming back to the Cardinals, just given that they drafted Josh Jones a year ago in the third round and presumably have been grooming him to be their right tackle.
I think you bring Beachum back. I just don't think it costs you that type of money. $4.5 million. Remember, the cap's going to be down. It's, you know, guys are going to have to take a lot of one-year deals for less than, you know, maybe in a predictable year, $4 million makes sense, $4.5 million. But I think in a non-traditional year like this, I think you get him for $3 million or less. I think you bring him back for $3 million, but I do think you bring him back. I like him. He was a solid pickup for them. I think you could offer him, $3 million, and I think you'd be able to keep him at that price. I don't think you'd have to pay a ton to get him.
He was very, very good, and I did very much like him. It's just that I look at options that you've got on the roster. And I mean, Justin Murray has played well and has filled in nicely in whatever role they've asked him to fill in. Remember, he was their right tackle for 12 of their 16 games a year ago, and you've already got him under contract. And then, of course, Josh Jones, the rookie out of Houston, who got a little bit of action this year. Presumably, you'd like to see if he slots into that spot. But look, if you could bring him back and give yourself depth to the position, sure, I'd be all for it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know if he gets the opportunity to start somewhere else, would he take it? Kenyon Drake comes in as the 77th best free agent available, according to Pro Football Focus. And here is their prediction. The Arizona Cardinals signed Drake for 3 years, $20 million, $11 million guaranteed, $8.5 million fully guaranteed at signing.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. Drake's gone. He's gone. They're going to let him go. I don't see any scenario in which he comes back. I really don't. You got Chase Edmonds. When he's healthy, he's very capable. There are some injury issues that you worry about a little bit, but I think for the most part, you get him. I think you draft the guy. And then I do think that, it may not be a great free agent class out there running back, but you can find somebody. You can find somebody for less money. I don't think you give that kind of money to the running back spot. I think you got Chase. And I think you'll draft somebody, not in the first round. You'll bring somebody else in. I don't expect Drake to be back.
On Monday, Cliff said he was impressed by Kenyon Drake's time so far in Arizona.
I think since he's been here the past two seasons, he's done a tremendous job. Has been durable and healthy and brings explosiveness to that position. And so I've been really impressed with Kenyon and what he's brought. He's been productive and scored a bunch of touchdowns for us. And so we'll see kind of where that thing plays out.
But we did see an awful dip in his stats from this year to last year, didn't we? I mean, in terms of his yards per carry, last year he was with the Cardinals. He was, let's see, I'm looking, 5.2 for the Cardinals. Overall, he was at 4.8. This year with the Cardinals, he was at 4.0 yards per carry. He didn't get to the 1,000 like everybody was hoping. Yeah, he scored his fair share of touchdowns, but did we not, and not all of this is on him, feel like we kind of lost our faith a little bit in Kenyon Drake as a short yardage option the last six or seven games of the season. I don't know if I trusted Kenyon Drake on 3rd and 2, 4th and 1, whatever the case may be. It just didn't feel like he was a reliable option at that point anymore for them.
Yeah, I liked him after last year. I wanted to keep him. I kept him, but you're gonna use him like a rental car, right? You're gonna use him like a rental car, get as much out of him, and then turn the car back in. I'm not. I don't want to buy the rental car, Bernsey. I don't want to buy the rental car. I don't want it. It's got miles on it, and you know it's probably going to cost me a little bit more than I wanted to. So I'm not interested in buying the rental car. He had 239 carries this year, which is about 100 plus more than he's ever had. 100 plus more than he's ever had. Every other year he's been in the league, 16, 17, 18, 19. He had only had, well, last year you got to combine the two. So last year he had 170, but that's still 70 less than what he had this year. I'm going to turn the keys back in. I'm going to say thank you very much, and I'm going to leave. I'm going to walk out of the rental car facility. And I'm going to hand them their car back. And then they could go rent it to somebody else. And then, maybe I'll rent another car or maybe I'll buy one in the draft. But I am not going to rent that car again.
Yeah.
I'm not going to keep my rental.
I don't disagree with you. Blockbuster trade today at Major League Baseball has us wondering.
Ooh.
It's been awfully quiet from the Arizona Diamondbacks so far, hasn't it been? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. He is considered one of the true superstars of the game in his last full season, not counting last year's shortened season. 32 homers, 74 RBI, he hit .284. He's considered one of the best defensive players in Major League Baseball. And now Francisco Lindor is a member of the New York Mets, a blockbuster that came down today. The four-time All-Star shortstop, one of baseball's best all-around players, traded by Cleveland along with pitcher Carlos Carrasco to the New York Mets, who with their new owner are spending like they want to get the Mets back to legitimacy. They gave up a couple of infielders, Andrés Giménez and Amed Rosario, a right-handed pitcher and outfielder as well. Cleveland hopes the moves will keep them competitive. And the Mets have signaled to the world that they are going for it.
Listen, I love Lindor. He gives you 30 to 35 home runs every year. You know, my group chat with my friends in New York, they're pissed. They hate the trade. It says we gave them their future double play combination. Giménez is an awesome fielder. Rosario's a great bat. Carrasco's 100 years old. Giménez was our future. Lindor doesn't have the temperament for New York. You'll see. We need pitching. I mean, my Met fan buddies, the ones that are in my group chat, they're not that happy with that trade. I'm like, you just got friends. He's 27 years old. He hits 30 to 35. So what? He's 5'10". Rosario's 6'2". So what? I mean, he is a dominant player in this league. He's the best shortstop in baseball right now.
He is terrific, and he's going to cost them $30 million when it's all said and done. And they appear to know that. You don't make a deal
like
this unless
you
do. Yeah, $30 million a year. I don't know what I thought that's what I said. But, yeah, $30 million a year is what they're expected to have to pay him when his free agency bill comes up. You don't make a deal. Like the Dodgers don't trade for Mookie Betts unless they know they're going to pay for Mookie Betts. The Mets don't make a trade for Francisco Lindor unless they know they're going to trade for they're going to pay him what he's worth, and $30 million is considered to be kind of the going rate for him at
Look,
this point.
Fernando Tatis Jr. and Francisco Lindor are the two best shortstops in baseball, okay? That's it. And I don't think there's anybody else even close. Those are your two best. And they're young, and they're dominant, and Lindor can hit you home runs, and he can hit for average, and there's so much to like about him. Cleveland, they lost. Listen, these teams have lost a lot of money, Bernsie. You know, these teams, you know, the Diamondbacks lost probably $75 million last year. $75 million. Want to know what? I haven't signed anybody? They lost $75 million. You looked at the Tampa Bay Rays. Man, they just traded Blake Snell. You're like, what? They traded Blake Snell? Yeah. You know how much money they lost? They lost a gazillion dollars. They lost a gazillion dollars. They just lost so much money. Cleveland lost a fortune. I mean, I'm on the Cleveland paper right now, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and that's what it says. They lost tens of millions of dollars. They can't afford to pay them. They lost too much money. So, that's where we're at right now. The economics of baseball are playing a factor at this point.
There's no doubt. And there are some teams, like the Padres, that are willing to spend while many, many others are not. And the Mets have established themselves as one of those teams that, we know the market is depressed. We understand that teams aren't spending. We don't care. We see a window and we're going for it. Here's Jeff Passan of ESPN.
This is a deal for the Mets that positions them as a team that wants to win a championship. This is Steve Cohen going and saying, I want the best players in baseball to come to New York. And I don't mean the Bronx. I mean Flushing, Queens.
Yeah, and in addition to that, John Heyman is reporting via his Twitter account that the Mets have not ruled out adding George Springer, even after the salaries that they added today. The Mets and the Jays have been seen as the two most prominent pursuers of him, and just because the Mets have paid big money to bring in Lindor, or will pay big money to bring in Lindor and sign him long-term, this does not take them out of the George Springer sweepstakes. Now, if they did that, I think even your buddies in your New York Mets chat group would probably be pretty happy about the state of the New York Mets after that.
Yeah, I mean, my friends just want pitching. They want a pitcher. You know, Noah's done for a while. They want pitching. They felt like that they had two shortstops under contract. They didn't need to make it. They want Springer. Absolutely, they want Springer. He'd be a good fit there. You come away with Lindor. And listen, you'll get Syndergaard back. You got DeGrom. You got Syndergaard. Stroman hasn't been that good. Carrasco, at one point he was good, right? 17, 18 wins a couple of years in a row. But he's 33, and you got to wonder if he's got anything left in the tank. Maybe he does. Maybe he doesn't. But if anything, I mean, if he gives you a good number four pitcher, you got him under 3 years. But if he gives you a decent number three or number four, he's probably in that category right now. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. You mentioned the Diamondbacks. I haven't been able to pick your brain yet about the Diamondbacks and what's been, like a lot of baseball, very quiet off season for Arizona. What's the plan? Do they have a plan going forward at this point?
Yeah, the plan is patience. You got to be patient. You got to wait. There's been some rumors about David Peralta with St. Louis. The Diamondbacks are not calling teams, but a lot of times teams call and inquire about players. So it's very possible that somebody called on Peralta. They're not actively looking to move him. Look, they would move him if they got the right deal. There's only a few guys in this organization that are untouchable for the Diamondbacks. The guys that they want to build around, and there's only three or four. Ketel Marte is clearly one of them. Zach Gallen is another. And then Christian Robinson is another guy, 20 years old, 6'3". They absolutely love him. He's somebody that they would not part with. So Christian Robinson, Gallen, Ketel Marte, those are guys that they wouldn't trade. I a lot of people have, what are they going to do, an extension for Zach Gallen? They're not right now. It's a wait and see approach. Where's this all going to go? When is spring training going to start? When is the regular season going to start? There's a cloud over financial decisions for many teams in this league. A big cloud. Are there going to be fans in the stand? Hey, if you knew you were having 2 million fans in the stand, it might change your economics more than the uncertainty of not knowing if you're going to have anybody in the stand. Like I said, my estimates of the Diamondbacks probably lost $70 to $75 million. Most teams in baseball lost tens of millions of dollars. Nobody lost less than 50. And there are teams that lost over $100 million. So I think the Diamondbacks, and I said this to you in November, be patient. They're not going to sign anybody in November and December. They're going to wait till it gets close to the spring training. I remember saying that to you in November. They're not going to sign anybody in November and December. They are going to wait, be patient, and try to get guys on the cheap when, you know, the market plays out, and you could go get guys on a 1-year deal for cheaper money.
Yeah, and they're not the only ones. A story in the Republic from Nick Pecoro a couple of days ago pointed out that according to research done by ESPN, this time a year ago, teams had committed $1.95 billion to free agents. This time, this year, $209 million.
Yeah, so and the only thing you're seeing is the San Diego Padres spend money left and right. You know why? They've got a new principal owner. He wants to make a splash. He's loaded. You know, they lost a lot of money too. But they've got a new owner, and he wants to flex his muscles. Here I am. Yeah. I'm going to make the Padres great. And so he's spending because he's new, and he wants that splash.
Yeah, nobody's spending right now. Nobody. The Arizona Cardinals offseason, tons of questions and concerns. What is it going to look like when the dust settles for next season? We'll talk about it next right here, Burns and Gambo Show.